You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
Ever wonder what really happens behind the scenes in construction, real estate, and development? We pull back the curtain on the new home construction industry, the real estate market, and the trends shaping it all. Discover the stories, insights, and expertise behind the process of building a new home. Join us for Trust the Process podcast, and let's build something great together.
Welcome back to Trust the Process, the podcast where we talk about new home industry, real estate, construction, and everything in between. As we go about our days, obviously we work in the real industry, we get a lot of questions.
Yeah.
So thought it would be fun to put that out to you guys and let you lead us in some of the questions or topics that you wanted to hear. So with that, we got some good response, and so we're going to jump into some of these questions, and maybe if somebody else had the question, it's something you might be wondering too. So hopefully we can answer some of them. Here's a good one. This one actually came up for us this week in a client conversation, so that is an important one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
This is really good, and I think this is a developing situation. This is, what do you think the NAR settlement means for builders? This could probably be an entire episode. But
I agree. No, yeah, it could.
Probably could. But there's probably so much content out there for this. But for anyone who's not following it, that's maybe in our audience. Essentially, that the class action lawsuit judgment came down in August that said listing brokers can no longer advertise buyer agent commissions, and buyer's agents have to negotiate directly with their buyer how much they're going to charge. And you can ask for that as part of your contract when you present your offer. But every offer is going to have unique compensation. So that buyer might be working for 1% or 2% of that buyer's agent, I mean. So they might ask for these varying levels of commission that is going to affect the offer. So when you're a developer, you're a seller more than anything, right? I mean, really, I have to sell X number of homes this year and next year and hopefully for many years to come. So I have a policy in place that I have a set number that I'm willing to give to someone who brings me a buyer.
Sure.
And what I'm doing is I'm rolling that into one larger percentage, and then the buyer, let's just call it 5%, the buyer can have that discussion with their agent to say, hey, can we keep 3% of this to pay for our closing costs, and you have 2% compensation. That's a conversation between them and their buyer, the buyer's agent. So I am not privy to that at all. I don't care how it goes, because I've conceded to this dollar amount. I was used to paying commissions anyway, so I've conceded to this dollar amount, this percentage, and it's per house, depending on how desirable I think the home is, or neighborhood. So there's one neighborhood that I just dialed it up an extra percent across the board because we have a lot of homes to get rid of in there, and it's a slower moving market, and I want to get some of those off my books, so I feel that that's a good enticing way for me to drive traffic. So I think it's overall a good thing. I think that it's forcing buyers' agents to be more transparent. It's allowing sellers a lot more flexibility, so you're seeing that kind of maybe a not so good offer is matched with a not so good compensation, because that buyer's agent's bringing you a non-phenomenal is the buyer you could probably get walking out on the street and find that kind of buyer. So I like that it's more tied to the other terms of the of the offer. So I think for builders, most builders are going to have to come up with some sort of policy. And I'm small, so I can't imagine, you know, these other larger builders just said, no, this is just what we're offering out. So I don't think it affects builders that much, but it is putting downward pressure on commissions, I feel. So I think if I can still have the same amount of traffic, or when I keep my rates normal that I'm willing to pay out, that will maybe drive traffic, because everyone around me is bringing and holding down their rates that they're paying.
And when it was first announced, or when the settlement first came down in, I believe it was July of 2024.
Yeah, July, implemented by August,
I think there was a fear that surrounded it, and everybody kind of went into a panic. Builders world wasn't sure how it would affect them on that side. Sellers, agents, listing agents, all of that. Everybody kind of had a little moment, if you will. But overall, I think it's been a pretty non-issue. I mean, I agree that it causes or it forces agents to be more transparent. It's a conversation that wasn't being had before, that was being had in somewhat, I don't want to say shady, but it just
wasn't in a
pure light. So yeah. I think it just brings that to the forefront. Commissions are real. It's part of the real estate industry and part of how homes are transacted. And so having that as a forefront mm-hmm. conversation with your buyer or seller, I think is a value add to them and to the whole experience. And it creates a more professional environment for the industry as a whole. So
I think it makes it more competitive.
Agreed.
Right. So yeah. Anytime you have more competition, I think you have better outcomes.
Yeah.
It might be bumpy for a little while in the mm-hmm. beginning, but I think ultimately it will mm-hmm. lead to better outcomes.
But don't you think that a lot of the panic that was, I don't even want to call it panic, but a lot of the anxiety that was
bated
created
breath.
By that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think, do you feel like you've seen?
Yeah, I think it's subsided. I think that it's, real estate is a high turnover business anyway. So I feel that there's maybe people that were on the fence to get out of the mm-hmm. industry. Maybe that forced them out of the industry. Mm-hmm. There are people who would have gotten in, but didn't because mm-hmm. they heard about the terminal. So
or I think it's easy, easy to get into real estate and, but if you don't have all of those pieces in place, you're just not going to survive it.
So it made it more complicated, but I think it's a good thing.
I agree.
It will leave better agents on the table.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. Good question. You know who you are. yes. Next one. Let's talk about. Sounds a little close to my heart. I love that one. So yeah, let's talk about design.
What do you think the future of design is? So there's a couple of. I mean, this could be home design. I'm just going to assume they're talking about everything.
And what didn't clarify what exactly. So yeah. it could be any. It could be interior design. It could
be
functional design.
Yeah.
Sure.
So outside in, I think
community design.
Community design. I would love to think maybe we see more mixed use. I would love to think we have more walkability, but I don't know if that's a pipe dream or not. Mm-hmm. So. Outside in, I think there will be architecture and design is going to be informed by building costs because mm-hmm. it is to this day. Because at the end of the day, like we said, the majority of new doors created are from production builders. So they are penny pinchers and bean counters. So the extra eave embellishments and things that you may have seen in the 90s and early 2000s when margins were there to support that and there was more competition back to our, mm-hmm. That's the other kind of C word, the competition home building is so much more consolidated now. So home builders don't have to do that. In the most consolidated markets, for lack of a better word, the homes are the ugliest, in my opinion. if you have only 5 or 6 publicly traded builders that are creating inventory, the pressure is not there to make a product that really stands out, especially when you're in a housing shortage. So mm-hmm. I think from the outside in, we'll see cost informing a lot of exterior design, simple roof lines, a lot of simple footprints that are probably 2-story to capture land and capture, mm-hmm. The economies of the building up versus
we're certainly
building out.
We're seeing a lot of that.
A lot of vertical mm-hmm. 3-story to get a 1900 square foot home in a footprint that may have only been a 1200. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing I think those things informing design, and then builders are doing their best to work within those constraints. And then going inside with floor plans, mm-hmm. I think that the era of the purely open floor plan might be drawing to a close. I think you might start seeing, especially in your larger homes, I think you're going to start seeing a little bit more room division again. And I've read some blogs, and that's some of that secondhand information, but mm-hmm. I'm already feeling it from buyers, and they're wanting those extra spaces. They're wanting mm-hmm. those flex rooms where they can have pool tables or bars offices.
Still like the great room. Everybody still loves the great room concept.
I think the great room concept.
But I think additional, kind of going back to that formal living or a den or a,
I think
a
those
family
kind of
room.
Third
so
spaces
you've got the
that,
great room and then
right.
a separate.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Those semi-private spaces. Mm-hmm. So I think we're going to see that. And I think we're mm-hmm. going to see the emphasis on large kitchens still being
yep.
ever present. And I think in the luxury homes, we'll see now more than ever the prep kitchens and the mess kitchens.
Seeing
I think
a lot
that's
more of
definitely
that. You're
building something.
Some of that. So
we are doing.
Yes,
we've done some
yes,
of that, and it's
have.
Been
yes.
very, very well received. Mm-hmm. So I think we're going to see a lot of that. We're going to see a lot of large pantries. We're going to see the Costco door, maybe. It's a fire nightmare, but there are these little doors that go right from the garage into the pantry, and it's usually a small door that only a kid could get through.
Yes.
And then
it's
it'll
kind
go
of
right.
A dreamy thought.
They call
you
it
just,
a,
yeah,
they call it a Costco
your big
door.
Water.
Yeah.
Case right. or all those things right into the pantry.
Yeah. So I think we're going to see the kind of those little things in new home construction. I think we're going to see an additional push towards energy efficiency. So you may see windows deleted and things, those are all perforations into your home. So you're going to see that in the more middle market homes. I think as you go into the luxury, the indoor outdoor living, at least in the Sun Belt, is really emphasized. I think that's not going anywhere.
I think windows are only getting bigger.
I agree. In the luxury stuff, the windows are only getting bigger. The doors are getting bigger. The window walls are getting bigger. So I think that's kind of what we'll continue to see. I think volume ceilings are going to be here to stay. But that being said, I think the era of that great room, it's just one big room with a 14-foot ceiling on a single story, I think you're going to start to see some more second and third spaces in those homes and in those floor plans that will give people kind of refuge away from those big, hard to climatize, hard to control rooms. So, and then in terms of aesthetics, I think we're in an era of earth tones and beiges and creams, and I think we're getting away from the stark, shiny finishes of the middle 2010s and the moderns. Is that, do you agree?
I do. That I agree with, yes. You and think? That we definitely know is happening. So the warmer tones, earthy tones, all of that is really, although we are seeing in design right now some big pops of color that are happening in the kitchen. So kind of the brighter, I just saw one the other day with red cabinetry. Which I don't have anything against red. It was just a lot in that particular home.
And it was stitched. Remember, it was like a upholstery.
Oh my gosh, that leather fridge that we saw was so pretty. But so even in cabinetry, I saw one the other day that was kind of that, you know, the blue, that sort of powdery blue countertop or cabinet, which, so we're seeing a lot of colors popping back in. So while most, it's still a neutral, it's still going to be those earthy tones. You're not getting into the, away from the cold, stark colors, but into the warmer tones. And I think we'll see more color coming into kitchens moving forward, colored cabinetry.
I agree.
You know, still the white countertops, that's still the clean, fresh look that most people are going towards. So, but agreed as far as colors.
These are the things that it's important to know as a developer.
It is. Especially, it is. And as you're a builder, you know, you're putting, we choose the selections. A lot of times every tile has to be selected, has to be chosen, has to be decided, and it has to be something that's neutral and relevant.
Marketable.
And on trend, exactly. It, with
warrantable. What's out there. You don't want to put a product that's a nightmare to warranty.
Good point. So
that was a good question.
Design trends are, design trends are a big part of it. And especially as you backed it out into even just the exterior design. So love it. Another good one. All right. So I have a couple more here. You have time for a couple more?
I do.
A couple more?
Okay. I do.
Here's one. Ooh, that's a good one. That is a good one. AI, and this is something in the marketing world that I am up against a lot, and a topic that is forefront for myself and everybody else in the marketing industry. So
I think we're all thinking, you know, I mean, so this is saying, this question is asking, what do you think AI can do for building? So I'm going to sub out building with developing, because building is, you could be a project management company, you could be doing whatever.
Okay.
AI, in terms of the constructing of the home, so to answer the direct question, I think it's going to be challenging to see AI improve scheduling, and unless you're a really well-oiled machine, but construction is a messy, think on the fly, problem-solving, in the moment, a lot of physical, tangible things that I don't think AI is going to do much for the building industry. I think the developing industry, in terms of being a developer, I think maybe some of our economic analysis, we have one multifamily project that's needing an economist to kind of give us a pro forma on it, because it's so many units and so many doors in order to get the funding for it from the banks. They're wanting to see an economist actually sign off on, is it a viable project? Some of that thought work, you might see some of the analysis, or at least the compiling of data, might really be streamlined by AI. Ultimately, no bank is going to sign off on a $50 million loan that was generated by an AI chatbot from Microsoft.
No offense to Microsoft.
So I think that you're always going to want that human touch to do those, to kind of smooth out those edges. But I think a lot of the data harvesting and the analytics and just kind of compiling everything and getting it into digestible bites is going to maybe be streamlined by AI. And I'm actually going to ping pong it back to you for the marketing piece. What do you think marketing, how do you think marketing will be affected by AI?
It already is affected by AI in so many ways. And I was just going to say, last year when I went to CES conference here in Las Vegas, and then the Builder Show, National Association of Home Builders.
CES is Consumer Electronics Show.
Consumer Electronics, and then the Home Builders Association. Two separate shows, but hot topics at both were AI and things like even just the refrigerators. You know, the refrigerators all have that component built into them now. You can connect it to your phone and it can tell you temperatures and it can read, you know, the wine we looked at the builder's show.
Yeah, you can really take a photo of your wine and you can go through your...
Yeah, so I think every, you know, your dishwasher and your washing machine, everything, all of the supplies and accessories that have gone into homes now are being tapped into AI. As far as the marketing side, there are things about AI that, again, can't be done. I know people who work in the interior design industry and they do entire homes through AI. Mm-hmm. And it just is, it's, while yes, it gives you a general idea, it's really, really hard to narrow in on exacts when you're using
AI. Without that human touch.
The other thing about AI is that you can't really use it for spoken. It's not good with fair housing. So it can say, you know, all of these elaborate things, but there are things in fair housing that we can't say or that you have to, that you would want to steer away from because we're not trying to pose the home to one buyer segment versus another. And AI doesn't necessarily have that intuitive language to determine that on its own. So while it can create great descriptions and things like that, they always have to be read. They always have to be run through the filter of a human. Otherwise, you're not getting the human touch. I think so much is being lost through AI that now people are beginning to get that kind of washed out feeling. And we're all kind of craving that, bring it back to the real. So so I hope we get back to real. I do. I had some, you know, there was a time where years ago, if you didn't jump in on the computer, you were getting left behind, right? Yeah. The computer was here and you have to get on the internet. We're all going to be using email someday. I mean, years ago when people were going through that, I'm sure there was some resistance. But those people that never got a website are no longer in business.
Yeah.
So if our competitors are using it, or they got into the group, right? They had to either, you know, do it or be out. So I think AI is that same thing. It was that moment where I kind of had to realize this doesn't feel good to me, but I know all of my competitors are using it. Every other builder in the industry is using it. All of the real estate agents in the world are using it. There has to be some piece of it that can streamline and help us too. So it's in my opinion, it's got to be a fine balance. And I think it's been so overused and so mass produced and everywhere that people are now beginning to crave that. Let's get back to the human touch again.
Do you think we went too early? Do you think AI should have been tweaked and honed a little bit more before it kind of was thrusted onto the public and now we kind of have this? I see a lot of AI imagery as very hollow and you can spot it a mile away.
You can see it a mile away.
And when you read it a mile away, I just, you know, you see these auto replies from different people in different industries and you can tell the email was AI. And now I guess there's AI email extensions that will draft responses to emails that come in and then you can just go into your drafts and hit send. Mm-hmm. And I've been on the receiving end of some of those as recently as last week. And you read and go, I'm not even going to finish reading it.
Or even the chatbots online. If you're on somebody's website and you're trying to get a question answered and you end up with this chatbot, you're like, this is clearly not a
human.
Real person. Right. I'm going to pick up the phone and call
because
just need to talk to someone who can actually understand what I'm asking.
Right. And we're asking this in early part of 2025, so maybe this is like asking about the internet in 1989. I don't know. It will get better. Updated our sales contract for our new home builds for what I call a piano disclosure. So a house is not a piano. It is imperfect. It's built on site by human hands out of imperfect, mostly natural materials. And as I was writing that, I realized, you know, it's one of those things. That's why people love homes. It's so human. And everything.
And it is a little flawed. I mean,
that's part of its charm. Right.
Yes.
It's good. Good.
Yes.
Because imagine an AI image of your house, it would feel hollow, but you know your house has dog scratches on it or whatever.
Right.
You know,
it's like an artist. You would much rather have a hand painted versus some computer generated image that you'd.
Right. And I could be partial here, but homes are art. And I think that it's not going to. You can. I've seen AI make architectural floor plans. And again, we might be talking about the internet in 1989. It has a long way to go. But it is an absolute train wreck. It just cannot be. An AI doesn't know how humans live and how humans want to live, and you can't train that very hard. I mean, I'm no AI expert. I barely know how to work my phone. So take what I say with a grain of salt. But,
and when you say, did we release it too soon? I don't know if they expected it to take off the way that it did.
So
I
they
think
just
when
thought,
they just brought, you know, level one ChatGPT to the world, they thought, well, let's just see what happens. And it got so much response and so much momentum. And so then,
it became a Wall Street darling.
I think it's taken off on a life of its own. So Maybe it did grow too much too fast and get incorporated into too many other places that now there isn't, you know,
we're not ready for it.
Washed out. Yeah. Next question. That one we kind of covered. So
this is Regulation Bot wrote this. Regulation Bot 2000. Why are you so anti-regulation? This person's got an axe to grind with me. I am not anti-regulation. I am frustrated by a lot of regulations, but I understand their place in the world. And we had a kind of a whole episode on this. And I think, and I'm sad if that was the takeaway from that episode, that I was anti-regulation, because I thought I was pretty emphatic that I appreciate regulation.
I think you covered both sides of it, and it isn't an anti-regulation necessarily as much as the hurdles that are put in place.
And,
yes.
And the fact that regulations never thin down, they only amp up, they only beef up, they only get thicker, sludgier. So I think those are the things. So
and that's a real part of home building. It's a part of any industry, but I think it's really a part of what you do. And so there is the obstacles that are put in place, and being transparent about that and admitting that this isn't easy, and jumping through all of these hurdles and trying to, you know, cut all of these red tape and all of the things that you have to.
What's so challenging about it is that it's so fragmented, because building is largely dictated by the lowest form of your government. So whether it's a town, township, or even an HOA, the first clearance I have is with an, if I'm building an existing HOA, my first step is getting it cleared with the lowest rung of government, the first, you know, circle. So you're clearing that, then you're clearing that, then you're clearing that, then you're clearing that. So there's just so many layers of it. Whereas I feel like if I were building cars, you're dealing with mostly federal agencies. You're dealing with maybe, I'm sure, several. I don't know how to build cars, but I can't even change my own oil or work my phone. So, but I just feel like what's so uniquely frustrating about developing and about housing and about building is just the layers of it, and how it starts with one person on a design review board can curtail, or, you know, can definitely derail your entire project. And I've had it happen before. One rogue board member on an HOA just didn't like me and made everything really challenging. And when they, and the reason I know it was them is because when they left the board, my life got a lot easier.
Interesting.
So it was going from 6-month approvals to 3-month approval. Like, how did that
happen?
And
some of that regulation, I feel like, is that just regulation for regulation's sake. And that was what we talked about. And there's a difference between regulations and codes, which would be a totally different question. But maybe just answer that quickly if you want to. Because I think people are confused by the structure that's put in place.
So a regulation would be, you can have this many homes per acre, or every 10 homes per acre, you have to have 1/4 acre of community space. That's more of a regulation. You could call that a development code, but it's more of a regulation. All codes are regulations, but not all regulations are codes. So every code is a regulation on the building industry. But a building code would be egress windows have to be 44 inches from the floor and have to be at least 30 inches wide and 30 and 24 inches tall or whatever, enough for a person to get out of. So that's a building code. A fire door going in a garage, it's a building code versus a regulation. So, but those are also regulations. But a regulation that's not a code is something like park space, or the fact that you need an HOA versus not. The fact that you have to have a hillside overlay study done, that's a regulation.
The fact that you need a signature on this document.
Yeah, the water district has to sign off on it. Public Works has to sign off on it. Traffic study, all those things. For even a 5-home subdivision has to have a traffic study. That's a regulation. Yeah. You could just have a house party and there'd be more people. You know what I mean? Versus a 5-home subdivision has to have a traffic study. But that's the study. There's only 5 homes, and this is only this much traffic. So, but we have to count the number of cars that are on that road, and how many trips are going to be generated by these homes, and just part of it. But those are the regulations that really slow things down and cost a ton of money. And there's just not a lot of smartness to it. There's not a lot of surgical precision to say, well, if it's under 50 homes, you don't need this. That'd be a way of deregulating some of the industry. There's a lot of other regulations on street widths. And you're looking at a regular residential street might have a 45-foot wide street. And all that does is promotes on-street parking, clutters up the street, makes it hard for kids to play, because we know the wider the street, the faster the car goes. We just know that. That's why back east or in small European towns where there's trees on both sides and the street's only 14, they barely have speed limits, because you're going to go 20 miles an hour anyway. because mm-hmm. Your mind is going to slow your car down. So I just feel like those are the regulations that do nothing, in fact, make suburbia less livable. Mm-hmm. And of course, take up a ton more land. Every right. single street being 15 feet wider than it needs to be adds up over yeah. an entire just neighborhood, let alone a city. So
sure.
those are the kind of regulations that are really hard to mm-hmm. get behind because I don't see the logic to them. Mm-hmm. So next question.
Next question.
Tired of this chat bot asking me questions. We probably asked the greedy one too.
Let's see. All right. How about... Ooh, this is a great one. Oh. We did touch on it a little bit, but you can circle back on that.
Crisis. This is a good one.
Yeah, it circles back on what we talked about a little earlier.
And we kind of touch on this every time because it's something we're really passionate about.
It is, and it's a question people have because we're all affected by the crisis out there.
And the question is, mm-hmm. what do you think the biggest factor affecting them? They can't see it.
I know what I'm thinking about.
What do you think is the biggest factor? So they're asking for one. I can't give a multifaceted 20-minute answer here.
Yeah.
What do you think the biggest factor affecting home prices? It's supply. I mean, it's supply. So that's the bottom line. There's just not enough supply. We know that. We're underbuilding in Las Vegas alone by about 8,000 rooftops, I think mm-hmm. we figured, based on household generation. So that is the biggest factor. How do you fix that is the zoning and the regulation mm-hmm. and cutting mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And maybe incentivizing building instead of disincentivizing building sure. and construction. Maybe tightening up some of the laws that consumers can sue builders for years after. It disincentivizes builders. City governments can block development mm-hmm. and ask for extra things. And there's development fees. Those are all things that constrict supply. But the simple answer is supply. When we had more supply, homes were cheaper. So, and is it just supply construction? No, there's also a lot of homes kept off the market, mm-hmm. owned by hedge funds, owned second homes. There's mm-hmm. a lot of reasons we have constrained supply. And then a housing market is something that becomes obsolescent. There's an obsolescence to the housing supply, right? I mean, homes can only go for so long without either needing massive improvement or not fitting the bill anymore. We're starting to see some teardowns in our city where the land value has become more than the home justifies, or maybe a densification in other cities. So if you look at, I think the National Association of Home Builders assumes the functional life of a house is around 70 years. So it doesn't mean that they fall down at 70 years, but it just means they would need such a substantial mm-hmm. investment. The original home is basically right. zero because it requires so much investment.
And the chances of it still being in over time, somebody has done the upgrades.
Yeah, does it ever go a full 70 years? No, probably not. But that mm-hmm. only takes us back to 1950 when you think of 55. So that's not really, 70 years sounds like a long time. I'm picturing in my head a home from the 1920s, but that could be a 1955 Rambler, a little ranch home.
Yeah.
You know, that
yeah,
that
but is, by somebody's redone the roof, somebody has ideally, you know, updated yeah, exactly. all, yeah.
But the thought is that over 70 years, they become basically worth zero. They require so much. So if you've not been maintaining.
Mm-hmm. So. Okay.
So that affects supply as well.
Okay. And we'll take one more of the questions. And this one, I like the thought on this one. As we talk about your role as a developer and some of the obstacles that you face, what's the most challenging?
What's the most challenging aspect of developing / home building? It's the time. It's just the amount of time to bring something to market is the single greatest. And that is not just because of regulation. That's just the time to build, the time to conceptualize. You're herding cats in many ways, right? I mean, just to get my architect to deliver on time and then that over to my engineers and get everyone talking. And those things just take time, even if there were no regulations. So it's not just regulations that slows things down. These are really complicated projects that we do. And we, even if it's just inside of an existing HOA, it's still a house. It's going to be there for, mm-hmm. yeah, functionally, 70 just 7 years.
That's what you just said.
Right. So I think that's the biggest challenge is just the time and the patience. It requires an astounding amount of patience. So that's my biggest kind of frustration / thorn in my side. It's just the amount of time it takes to do anything.
Mm-hmm. And the time requires patience.
And the time requires patience and requires a lot of grit. Mm-hmm. That you have to have the stones to invest all this money up front and mm-hmm. or take on all this debt or a combination of both. You usually have a lot of money invested in and a lot of debt. And you just say, I hope this works because it's too far in now. So. Mm-hmm. That's the next challenge.
Oh, good. I love it. And thank you guys for sending the questions. Really good conversation that we were able to start here. We'll do others. So if you have questions or if there's something on your mind you'd like us to address, feel free to send it. You can shoot it over to any of our online platforms, and I will get those and we'll rally them together and address them in a future episode. So thank you so much.
Appreciate
it. And we'll see you guys again next time on another episode of Trust the Process Podcast. See you then. Bye-bye. Thanks for tuning into the Trust the Process Podcast. Make sure to follow us on Spotify to stay in the loop with the latest insights, project updates, and everything in between. See you next time.